Hi, and welcome to Becoming Less, an Edmontonian journey to less waste, less impact, less consumption, and less clutter. Becoming Less is brought to you by Waste Free Edmonton, and together we're dedicated to waste reduction efforts, big and small. I'm Biz, and today I'm here with Bree. Hi, Bree, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good. And we were going to talk about consumerism in general and probably get into a little bit of how we'd like to see things shift into a circular economy. Did you have anywhere you wanted to start off? Or that's kind of a broad topic.
Yeah, I think that starting with consumerism is a really good place to start and how consumerism affects the linear and circular economies.
For sure. For those of you listening who don't understand the linear, what we mean by linear is that basically the way things are right now is we extract resources, we process them, we manufacture them, we sell them, and then once they're purchased, that person just throws them away when they're done. And so it's like there's a start and there's a finish and there's no coming back. There's no circular economy. There's no cycling back to the beginning and trying to keep things, I keep wanting to say cyclical, but I guess that is exactly what I'm trying to say. Cyclical and renewable, regenerating, like we want to be able to keep, if we can't keep these things up forever, which of course in that system we can't, then it's got to fall apart at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like a take, make, waste type of process. So you're taking the resources from the earth and you're extracting them and building something and then throwing it away. And then the circular economy really cuts out that last piece of waste. And I wish people could see my hands, what I'm doing with my hands now, but yeah, creating like a, bringing it back to the beginning and continuing that process. And I think that we've really shifted away from, things used to be like that, not with everything, but when something that comes to my mind is when for people who drink milk, you know, it comes in a plastic jug. And obviously you're able to take that to the recycling depot, but it has such a short lifespan for the time that it can be recycled. And back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, you would have a milkman come and bring glass containers to your door and continuously refill them. And we've really moved away from that as a society for convenience sake, because, you know, having someone drop milk off at your front door isn't instantaneous and isn't exactly when you need or want that milk. So I think that the shift in consumerism for instant gratification has been something that's really driven us to more of a linear economy rather than a circular economy.
And that's where convenience culture comes into play, which is something I would love to do an episode about. So we will kind of skim over that a little bit right now.
Totally.
Yeah, I think the problem too, I think, is that it's become like this domino effect where we cave to convenience. And then because things are more convenient, we can do more and therefore more is expected of us. And therefore we don't have time to get rid of that convenience and get back to something that takes longer.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's this big downward spiral of how do we get out of this?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like we've dug this hole really, really deep. And now we're like, oh, no, we're at the very bottom and there's no way to scramble out of it. But there are so many organizations and businesses, nonprofits, whatever you may call them, that are creating opportunities for us to take our way out of the linear economy and this convenience culture into the circular. And one of them that I think of, you folks have interviewed him, I believe, Corey from ReWaste.
Oh, yes.
That's such a great innovative way to take plastics out of the linear economy and bring them into the circular economy. And I feel like there needs to be more of that innovation happening. There needs to be more incentive from different levels of government into making that a priority for our economy.
Yeah. And even that, I think what Corey does with ReWaste is sort of more of a loop-de-loop than I would say a complete circle. Because even though it is overall making less plastic because it's using plastic that would have otherwise been waste and turning it into something else so that we don't need virgin plastic for that, it still ends up like it comes back and does a loop. Or maybe two loops, maybe three loops, but eventually it's plastic, right? So it's still going to be there forever. And eventually it's going to degrade to a point where we can't use it anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great point. And I think that's where eliminating plastic from being produced that isn't absolutely necessary. So obviously plastic has a lot of uses in our society that are really needed. One of them that comes to mind is the medical sphere and healthcare. Obviously those plastics are created for health reasons, for sanitary reasons, but there's so many plastics that there's no need to create them. Something that comes to my mind is condiment bottles. A lot of them are plastic, but you can make condiments in glass containers. It's just a bit more expensive. And so I usually try to opt for the glass options as opposed to the plastic options. But again, it comes at that increased price point. So,
and we're stuck with that too, because glass is so much more difficult to reprocess. That takes so much more energy. The nice thing about glass is you turn it back exactly into what it was. Mm-hmm. Whereas with plastic, it always kind of downgrades into something lesser. Not, and I want to reiterate that I'm not downplaying what Corey's doing. Including those loops as much as we can is a wonderful, wonderful thing. It still does require that virgin plastic to be made for those materials that would be thrown out to begin with, though. And I think what a lot of people, like if those of you out there want to contribute to that, it's important for people like Corey and ReWaste and others who are trying to include those loops to look for plastics that are made from post-consumer recycled plastics. Because if there's no demand for those recycled products, then no one's going to recycle them.
Absolutely. And I think that in my dream world, someone like Corey would take all of the plastic that has been created. And if we put a stop to all unneeded plastic production, and then someone like Corey is able to use up everything that's currently in existence, that's great. And that's a great place for us to kind of start and then decrease the amount or completely stop the amount of unneeded plastic production and start moving towards things like aluminum and glass that are maybe a bit more easy to recycle.
Or reusable, right?
Totally.
Like, you can't really reuse plastic in the same way, because if you heat it up, if it gets frozen, it starts to degrade just doing that. Whereas glass is so durable and so clean. So like you said, with the milk or the condiments, why can't we have a refill opportunity for those? We have refill opportunities starting to emerge for cleaning products and like shampoos, soaps, dish soap, laundry soap, that sort of thing. But so far, I haven't seen a whole lot of refill options for edible items.
Yeah, absolutely. Like one that's something that I really struggle with in like my waste reduction journey of like, how can I not consume new virgin products? And how can I use what I already have? Condiments and food has been a difficult one. Condiments more so. But an option that I found, at least in Edmonton specifically, is Earth's General is a really great place to refill those consumable items. One that comes to mind is honey and syrup and the different little condiments like soy sauce and things like that.
They have refills really for great. Those?
They do, yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
It's fantastic. It's a little bit, the staff, they do the refilling for you because it gets a bit messy and whatnot.
I can totally understand that, especially with food where there would be contamination risk and more red tape you have to go through to get to be allowed to do something like that.
Yeah.
So totally get that.
Yeah. It's been like a really invaluable resource for me in my waste reduction journey, and stumbling upon it one day when I used to live in Ritchie in Edmonton, and I stumbled upon it and I was like, oh, this is perfect. I can fill everything I need here. They have dry goods, everything. The majority of their produce is in, you buy it individually, you put it in your reusable produce bags. And so it's a really great place to go to help with that. Obviously you're consuming the food, but talking about bringing it back to circular economy, continuing to reuse your glass jars and your mesh produce bags or your cloth produce bags. That's a really great resource in the city to help with the circular economy and waste reduction movements.
I know at one point I was getting glass milk in glass at Blush Lane. And then you go take your bottles back and they take the bottles and there's a deposit for them and then you get your glass. But yeah, you have to remember to bring them back, obviously. But
yeah,
there is that incentive because of the deposit to do so. And so I thought that was good. Not quite the convenience of having someone drop it off at your door.
Totally. I wish we could move back to that method of having someone drop the milk off on your doorstep. And
it's so funny because we get everything else delivered to our door these days.
That's true. Someone needs to bring back the milkman.
Bring back the milkman.
Hashtag bring back the milkman. I like that.
Excellent. Yeah. That will totally be a hashtag. In
the show I think notes. So. Everyone tweet that after this. Let's get it trending.
Nice. When we talk about food, we can actually create that circular system with food because anything that's wasted with food becomes compost. And what does compost do? It grows our food. And of course, it diminishes, right? Like you don't have as much going into it as you do coming out of it. But I mean, you can compost human waste with very specialized equipment. There is a toilet in the city at compost school, if you've ever been there.
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. I love that facility. Yeah, I guess it's a facility. It's not a building so much, but they do have a composting toilet there that you can go and check out. It's pretty cool.
Interesting. Yeah. I hear a lot about composting toilets when it comes to people living in tiny homes. I have a friend who lives in a tiny home and she might have a composting toilet, but I remember her talking about it when they were building the home, looking at the different options. So there's so many little things within composting that you wouldn't think of, like a composting toilet.
Yeah. And that would be like the ultimate circular system for any food that you get. You compost the remains of the food that you cut off and you compost your own waste. And that goes back into growing your own food. Voila, you've created a circle.
Totally. The ultimate circle.
Yeah. And I think a lot of our clothing and stuff is made from plastic these days.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't even do that circular system with clothing. Again, we can put some loops in there. Clothing is the technology is developing for recycling clothing, although it's still very difficult because it's so many different things in the fibers.
Mm-hmm.
But back when people wore cotton and hemp and wool and those things, when those clothes broke down to the point where they weren't wearable anymore, they could biodegrade.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. There's, and like with the demand for more clothing and population growth, obviously I'm not an expert in textiles, but things have been added to textiles, different types like polyester. I'm naming some, this might not be the truth, but like combining them all, and it makes it more difficult to break down and turn into something else.
Yeah, and especially when they're mixed fibers. So like 100% polyester would be a lot easier to recycle than 30% polyester, 50% cotton, 20% spandex or whatever, right? Like there's so many different materials in there. How do you get them apart in order to turn them back into something else?
Totally. And bringing consumerism into the topic of clothing, you know, the demand for new trends and meeting the trends that are current has really pushed those mixed textiles and increased production and quicker production, resulting in not very high quality clothing, which breaks down quicker. And then, you know, people are throwing things away when maybe a seam comes apart and they're like, oh, this is not useful anymore. I'll throw it away because now it's quote unquote broken. And I think that talking about loops and not necessarily complete circles, but creating loops, if more people were inclined to repair their clothes or mend their clothes, I think that we could reduce a lot of the waste that's happening in the textile industry.
100%. I love visible mending. It is so fun to me to see, like, I ran into somebody who had like this bright purple jacket and then there was a tear in the sleeve and they had done this beautiful blanket stitch to stitch it back together with rainbow thread. And they're like, totally letting the world know that I repaired this jacket.
Yes, it's like a statement piece. It's kind of like wearing a button on your clothing. It's just like you can add some personality to your clothing and also, let people know that, hey, I repaired this with my own hands, and hopefully it's going to last another couple of years until I need to repair it again. And removing that one piece of clothing from the landfill, even though someone would just say, oh, it would just be one piece of clothing in the landfill, it's not that big of a deal. But
said 7 billion people.
Exactly. And that's because that's a lot of people's reasoning behind things like mm-hmm. that is, oh, well, you know, I'm just one person. It's not going to make that big of a difference. But then if you flip the switch and you say, someone says, oh, well, I'm not going to mend my clothes because I'm just one person. It's not going to make that much of a difference. It's, you know, there's two sides to the coin.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think what needs to happen is we need to start really, I don't want to say forcing, but encouraging manufacturers mm-hmm. and businesses to have to incorporate the end of the life of their products into the manufacturing. So if clothing were created in such a way that it could be taken apart into its separate materials and then recycled or disposed of appropriately, I think that should be the responsibility of the person who made it in the first place.
Absolutely. And someone that, well, not someone, but an organization that comes to mind that kind of does that is Patagonia. I know that
yes.
They're so amazing. I had a friend who got a huge rip in his shorts when he was climbing, and he was like, oh man, like, I think I'm just going to have to, you know, throw these out. And I was like, no, like, reach out to Patagonia. They'll fix it for you. Mm-hmm. And so he shipped them, which is a whole nother conversation of, you know, shipping your clothes and
yeah.
what's associated with that. But they repaired them. And I believe they have, you can send your clothes back to Patagonia and they'll buy them from you, I believe. And then they have a secondhand section to their online store where you can purchase used clothing that other people have sent back
yeah.
now that they're done with it.
They're amazing. They literally have had ad campaigns that say, do not buy these clothes. Because they're
totally.
Like, we make good clothes, but only if you need them.
Exactly. And I like that. It's really pushing for people to use what they have and utilize what's in their closets. Because a lot of the time, you know, if you think, oh, I'm going on a camping trip this weekend, I need to get a new pair of hiking pants because my old ones are worn out. You know, there is a way to give those old hiking pants new life and continue to use them for years to come. And I think that, you know, talking about consumerism again, there is that some people, you know, new is better and used and maybe repaired isn't as aesthetically pleasing to some people. And it's interesting how we've made that switch from, I could continuously think back to the 50s and the 60s. I love the, not all of the mindsets from that era, but just like the using what you have and utilizing everything to its last life, because that was a mindset that you had back then. I remember my grandma talking about, she's a big seamstress and she loves to repair clothing and see the value in clothing and the meaning behind it. And I don't think, obviously, items nowadays aren't made as well as they were back in the 50s and 60s. It's a lot of, like I talked about, fast processing of clothing, but I think there needs to be a change in mindset in viewing old things in a new light.
Have you seen Downton Abbey?
No, I haven't.
No?
But
okay.
I have heard great things.
Just talking about like the way things used to be and how we took care of our clothes and stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, the bourgeoisie did not mend their own clothes, but their staff did. So even mm-hmm. they wore mended clothes.
Yeah.
And so I was fascinated to see like the fancy, fancy stuff they wore. But then if there was a rip in something or a stain, the staff were expected to repair it and clean it and take care of it, not mm-hmm. just throw it out and buy a new dress. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Even back then, so, I mean, I'm assuming this is accurate to history, but even back then, it seems like they were okay with wearing the same outfit more than once.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that some people aren't okay with nowadays is, oh no, someone's already seen me at work in this outfit. I need to go and get a new one. And then, I mean, even if that is the mindset, there are options to to reduce the demand for new clothing and production of clothing. So thrift stores and like vintage shops and mm-hmm. also like clothing swaps. Like there are so many options to help reduce the production of new material goods.
For sure. And for like fancier events, the Dress Library is a great resource. I'm going to go visit them in a few days because I need something to wear to the Emerald Awards.
Yes, that's such a great idea. Oh my goodness, I didn't even think of that.
So I'm excited to go and pick out something fancy because I don't dress fancy very often. So it doesn't even make sense in my brain. Like this is just my mindset. It doesn't make sense in my brain to buy a dress for something that I may never need that again.
Absolutely. And I think that that's so true for a lot of big events, like people who buy my grad dress from like 10 years ago, it sat in my closet and I'm never going to wear it again because it's so specific to that one event.
Right? Yeah. And I think that's just a mindset. Like people will just, they're like, oh, I need this, so I'm going to go buy it. And we need as a society to kind of have that mindset shift and that normalization of I do need it, but I only need it once. Therefore, I don't need to own it. Mm-hmm. And that can go for a lot of things. Tools.
Yeah.
Right?
The Edmonton Tool Library.
Edmonton Tool Library. Borrowing from a neighbor. Mm-hmm. Right?
Totally.
Yeah. Like I've borrowed a stud finder from my coworker like two or three times now because I just moved and I was like, okay, now I need to set this shelf over here. But I don't need my own of those.
Exactly. I think there's already so much stuff in circulation. When I think about you go to the thrift store and you see, I don't know what a specific example is, but maybe like photo albums. There are so many photo albums in existence, but sometimes it's a bit more convenient to go to the store because you know you're going to find a photo album. Whereas you might have to search around for the exact photo album that you want. And maybe photo album is a bad example here, but I think that...
I was going to say, I don't know too many people probably looking for photo albums anymore, but...
that's true. I'm thinking of it because I just made one the other day for my partner for our anniversary. So that's top of mind.
Aww.
But photo album is not a good example. That is not very relevant to everyone.
But it's relevant to some people. And hey, scrapbooking is a big thing.
It is a big thing.
And I mean, if you're into hobbies and stuff like that, you can also find a lot of those items and materials. You can find them secondhand. You don't necessarily have to go and buy new papers that you're just going to cut up and shred up anyway. Mm-hmm. Right?
And it also saves money. Like a lot of the time participating in parts of the circular economy isn't just good for the environment, but it's also really good for your wallet. Like I just purchased a home and I'm trying to furnish moving from a little basement suite to like a bungalow. I have so much space and I have no furniture to fill it with. And instead of purchasing...
I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing.
No, not at all. No, it's not a bad problem to have.
Right? Most people have the opposite problem. I have too much stuff. It's cluttering my life.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you brought up the concept of saving money on it, because one argument that I hear about, don't buy so much stuff. Well, what about the economy? And I would love to see more people buy service mm-hmm. than stuff.
Absolutely.
Because I think service is underrated. Like even waitresses. Like in the States, waitresses are paid like $3 an hour because they're expected to be paid on their tips. But people don't like, that's just so wrong.
Totally. Oh my gosh. I so agree. Like service is, I took in my degree, I can't remember what the stat is, but service makes up a really large part of the economy. And I think there's the opportunity for it to take up a lot more as we shift to more sustainable production, means of production. Service has a huge opportunity to participate in the repurposing and reuse of material items that we use every day.
Yeah. And I think that people, like I said, people really undervalue that service. But I think here's one thing that is just kind of grinds my gears. So I'm just going to vent right now.
Yeah, do it. Go.
People go to a small store. And they poke around and they get advice and then they go buy something on Amazon because it's cheaper. But you're not just buying the product. You are also buying the service of those experts. And that bugs me so much. Like, I get it. I get that you want to save money. But what are you going to do when those people are gone because you haven't supported their business?
Exactly. You're taking the knowledge from someone who has that good, and maybe you're going to save, I don't know, a certain percentage when you go buy it on Amazon. But there are so many pieces that go along with, instead of buying it at the store, yeah, it might be $10, $15 more. But when you're buying it through Amazon, you're not getting the instant gratification because you could have bought it from the store and had it the same day and not the next day with Amazon.
Well, unless they have to order it in because stores can't hold as much stuff as an Amazon warehouse.
This is true. That's true. But yeah, there's that associated, you know, greenhouse. Well, there's greenhouse gas emissions associated with everything, but depending on where things are coming from, if the store has it in stock, there's so many different aspects when making that purchase. But yeah, supporting the person who gave you the advice and the information that you needed to make a decision is probably the best route to go.
Because people don't seem to grasp that they're, I don't think people really grasp the concept of paying for something that isn't a physical thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is really, that is a hard thing to get across to somebody. It's like, you are paying for advice, you are paying for expertise, you are paying for the service of helping you pick something out, you are paying for people's ideas. But if you're not taking a thing home, you haven't paid anything, and therefore you're not paying for those things, you're paying for the thing. And, oh man, do I wish that people would get it in their heads that the people who work at these niche stores, they have accumulated that information over years, probably, like years and years and years, and that's worth something.
Absolutely. And it's and it's almost like price tags need to have a little breakdown section underneath them that say $1 goes towards this and $5 goes towards the knowledge that I've gathered over the last 15 years. And I think that it's like when small businesses describe why their products are priced the way they are, I think that would maybe help consumers realize why things are priced a certain way and help justify them purchasing it through that specific organization or business.
Yeah. And also, the more streamlined and automatic everything gets, the less skilled people end up. And I think it's really important for people to have those skills, whether they be intellectual or tangible skills, that they can pass on and that they can feel like they're contributing in a meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's so important. And I think it's totally undervalued.
No, I completely agree. And I'm glad you went on that rant, because that's something I've kind of thought about it before, but never really dug into the topic. So I think that's something really interesting to bring away from this conversation is the value that goes into services and products as well.
Yeah. I think that if we could switch from paying people for things and switch to paying people for services, you would end up getting things, but clothing is a good example of this. Clothing is an excellent example of this, because right now people only value the thing. And in their minds, a t-shirt is like $10. But have you ever made a t-shirt?
It is. Oh my gosh. I've recently gotten back into sewing, and it is like so time consuming and so frustrating. And just like, I made a skirt about a year ago, and the same skirt that I would have bought for maybe Simons or something brand new would have probably been like $50. And I spent so much time making it and a little bit crying over it.
So blood, sweat, and tears went into the skirt.
Yeah, literally blood, probably from poking myself with
right? a pin. And you value that skirt so much more because you put service into it.
Yeah.
But we don't value the service someone else has put into it.
Mm-hmm. That's such a good point.
But somebody who makes skirts for a living would probably be able to do it a lot easier and faster, more efficiently, but still worth time for that. I recently purchased a pair of jeans from Arturo Denim. Have you heard of them in town?
I haven't, no.
They make their jeans here. So they're on 124th Street and they're lovely. And then so you go, you try it on and they will do like little alterations. So they'll hem them for you. They even took in the waist a little bit for me because I'm a little bit big bottomed. So it's like the waist needed to be skinnier than the thighs would allow. Yeah. And so they did that for me because I bought jeans from them and they're great jeans. I love them. So yeah. And they're not cheap.
Oh, because I would not.
They were made by a human.
and fit to you specifically. Yeah. Yeah, that would make sense that they weren't cheap.
Yeah, but that's okay because I'm quite happy to pay these people for their skill and their time.
Absolutely.
And not pay somebody in China 50 cents for their 10-year-old's time. I don't know.
Like, yeah,
I know where it came from.
Exactly.
Which also is great.
And you create that connection with a piece of clothing. And also when it's made to fit and it's made with quality materials, it's more likely to last a long time. And you also have that connection to it because you had an experience getting that item made. And I think experience creates that connection that really makes you go, okay, there's a hole in this. I am not throwing these away because I have such a sentimental attachment to it. And also I spent a lot of money on it.
There are some people, and there's this person I follow on Instagram, and I don't, not that I spend a lot of time on Instagram these days. I try to avoid it at all costs if I can, but it was like eye candy to watch her repair these jeans because she could darn these jeans invisibly.
I think I might have saw that video.
And I'm just like, what is this magic? And so there's people out there who have these skills to make these things last a long time, but those skills are being lost because we don't value them. And it makes me sad.
I wish that more people had the appreciation of like seeing a sweater that's mended and you're like, wow, that is so cool. Tell me how like the process that went into mending that and tell me the story behind why you decided to mend that shirt instead of just throw it away. And that's my hope, is that more people have that appreciation, but how do we build that appreciation? I think the question.
Everyone needs to go and make themselves a t-shirt and get back to me.
Hey, everyone go make a t-shirt, find a YouTube video, make it, and then tell us what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And then tell us that you think $10 is too much for a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So what would be an environmental win for you lately?
An environmental win for me, like personally?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, that's a big question. This is a small win, but it was a battle that I had to fight with my partner. We are doing a big yard cleanup. Well, we just did a big yard cleanup. And obviously the cheaper, easier option for bagging these leaves would be the blue plastic clear bags. And I made a really good argument that we cannot bag them in plastic bags. We need to go buy the paper compostable bags. And I was able to win him over and convince him that even though it was more expensive, not by that much, but it's better for the environment and it'll make me happier.
Congratulations. So
thank you very much. Small win, but slow and steady wins the race.
And what has been an eco challenge for you?
Oh gosh. An eco challenge, I think, has been just owning a house, an old house that needs a lot done to it. And how do you approach renovation with a waste reduction mindset? It is so difficult. And, you know, coming full circle back to the episode that you did on renovation.
Yeah. That is definitely a challenge. As I had mentioned in that episode, we recently did our floors and I was really happy to have gotten returned floorboards for cheaper.
Yeah. See, it's like good for the planet and good for your wallet.
Yes. See, somebody just bought too much. I will take those. Thank you. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a blast.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
You are very welcome. I would like to thank all of our listeners who tuned in today, and I would like to thank the patrons who support Waste Free Edmonton's efforts on the backside that nobody sees, because we do a lot of background stuff trying to reduce waste with the city. So we really appreciate you guys supporting us on wastefree.ca and on Patreon. So if you want to go to Patreon and check us out, that'd be much appreciated. I'd also like to thank Change Toothpaste, who sponsor the podcast and cover the costs, because it's not free to do, and we are all volunteers here. If you'd like to get in touch with us here at Becoming Less, you can reach us by email at becominglesspod@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at becominglesspod, or you can go to wastefree.ca/becominglesspod for all the ways to connect and listen. Until next time, we can all be a little less than we were yesterday. Most people want to sell me something.
Totally.
Right?
Totally.